Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Amp Radio, another MMA podcast, episode number 3, fellas. Let's meet. We are always, of course, live and unedited, so that's why we make you guys laugh, because we make mistakes. Let's meet the host, fighting out of the red corner, the Maple Leaf himself, the man who never has to say sorry about any of his calls to MMA Junkie Radio, Proteus.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Follow him at Proados. And, of course, we could never do this without the funny man himself, the infamous instigator, fighting out of the blue corner, the man down south, the man who's running on fumes since Ronan is barely getting him any sleep, Joe Daddy 85. Follow him at Joe Daddy 85. Joe from H-Town.
Good morning, fellas.
Gentlemen, it's been one hell of a week, and I got to be honest with you, I am fiending for some MMA Junkie Radio. I know that they were off, and I think they're off next week, guys, and I don't know what to do with myself, fellas.
Yeah, it's been a rough week, especially with that Tuesday show with neither of the hosts for the first half an hour.
Yeah, I'm okay without him, man. I won't miss him. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. No, man, it's been pretty crazy, hectic at my house here, man. Not getting much sleep. This dude is keeping me up all hours of the night, man. So I haven't had any time to listen to any podcast, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that's what makes MMA Junkie Radio a little different, guys, is at least for me, and I think Proteus too, and maybe Joe. To me, they're not a podcast. I know they started off that way, but they're live. And so it fills in that two-hour time slot for me. So I guess I have to rearrange things for the next week. And the good thing is maybe we'll have some content. Right, guys?
Yeah, for sure. And shout-out to everybody who's listening to us. It makes us feel real good about ourselves that we're succeeding so much.
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, all the feedback has been positive. You know, it's great to hear. I'm pretty shocked that nobody has shot us down. I can't wait to hear the first negative review. But, you know, props to Junkie Nation for tuning in and supporting the cause, man. We're all the family, man, and that's the way I feel. And I love the support that we got from Junkie Nation so far.
Yeah, you know, I think we're doing well, right?
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Yeah, I think we're doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I was telling these guys, by the way, and here's where we're going to do a little bit of the Brooklyn Brawler and hit ourselves in the back a bit. You know, when we drop, we're in the top 20, guys, when we drop, and then we stay about the top 30 for most of the time. We dropped out of the top 30 as it gets a little older. But we're doing pretty well, guys. You know, we missed some stuff when we were off. So let's get into some of the stuff that we missed, because right when we got off the air, guys, actually literally even before we landed on the air, there was a lot of news, and then when we got off, there was a lot of news.
Yeah, sure.
You guys want to?
Why don't we start off? Why don't we start off, Tony, putting a bow on this Ariel versus the UFC stuff? How does that sound?
Go ahead, guys.
Well, Joe, go ahead. What do you think has transpired over the past week? Actually, it was only what, 2 days?
Yeah, man. Ariel did his show. I think he had 20,000 people watching live, which is pretty ridiculous. We have 20 people listening live, so that's pretty awesome. But you know, it was pretty emotional, his show to watch, and he just left it all on the line, man. He put some issues out there that hadn't been known. You know, everybody's making a big deal about Fox paying him, and He's on the Fox and Zufa. I'm sorry. He's on the Zufa payroll, which he explained. You know, he did not want that, man. So luckily, you know, after the show, or I think that day or the next day, he got reinstated. The UFC sent out a press release, which they kind of took a shot at Ariel, to be honest, in that press release, which I didn't like. They said that they didn't agree with the way their lead reporter put out, you know, stories or whatever. So it's hopefully it's put to bed, and let's see what happens next. I don't think this is the end. I think this will happen again, and let's see how the media reacts to the next time.
You know what it reminded me of, guys? Hearing the news come down on Monday that Ariel has reinstated, it reminded me a little bit of that movie Gladiator, where a slave becomes greater than an emperor. Yeah, that's what it reminded me of, guys. And the amount of media pressure, mainstream media pressure, that never covers UFC, never covers MMA, was so intense on the UFC that I don't think they had any other choice, guys. It was nothing but a negative PR storm on them. And they had no other choice but to have cooler heads prevail and credential everybody that's concerned in this matter.
You know, the great thing about this is I don't think it got into the point where, and by the way, a great flick, Gladiator. I don't think it got into the point where Ariel became larger than the UFC, but it became a story. The thing is, just like Joe said, though, guys, it ain't changing. As long as Zuffa and Dana still own, it's still going to be the way they run it, and that's the way they run it. And I don't see it changing at all, right? Don't we still have that one? Joe had me listen to one podcast, and there's still that one guy that's been 10 years later, and he still has never been reinstated, right? He still doesn't have his UFC credentials back.
Yeah, there's Josh a few, Rose. Actually. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Josh Gross, you know, he's very famous for being kicked out, and he's told the story that, you know, after being kicked out, he was offered a job with UFC. He turned down UFC, and you know, they told him, you know, you'll regret this for the rest of your life, and he hasn't been credentialed, man. So, you know, these gangsters in Las Vegas, man, you know, they're just. It's really bothering, man. It's really bothering me. I don't like it, man. And I'll be honest with you, man. I canceled my Fight Pass subscription. I'm not paying for that no more. All the programming they have, you know, UFC Unleashed, UFC Ultimate Insider, UFC Tonight, man. I used to record everything. Ultimate Fighter. I'm not doing that no more. I'm just watching fights. I'm supporting the fighters. I'm not watching any UFC programming whatsoever.
So no more Megan O'Leary for you, eh? That's unfortunate.
Well, I'll catch her Twitter feed and her videos and her. No, I'm not watching any of that, man.
Yeah.
What
no.
a hottie.
You know what? To go into that just a tad, sorry, Proteus, but I like Megan O'Leary a lot, but I could definitely use more Heidi Andros. I'm not joking.
Hey, I'm not. I don't like to discriminate, so. Let's bring them all in. There's got to be room for everybody.
Yeah. Let's go to the next topic. What you got, Tony?
Well, unfortunately, we lost an MMA legend. Some would say a street brawler, but he did fight for the UFC. He did fight for Elite. I mean, we lost Kimbo and Bellator. And let's not forget that debacle. But we lost Kimbo. And the great thing about this is, guys, if you hear – I didn't know that much about Kevin Ferguson – except for the entity that he was on YouTube, et cetera. But if you hear anything about his passing, and this typically happens, but you can't hear a bad thing about him. I mean, he's a lot smarter than we thought he was. You know, Brendan Schaub told us one story about how he would go to him and say, "Hey, Schaub, I don't know about how to wrestle. I don't know how to do this Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So if you can teach me, I'd appreciate it." He goes, "I know where I am. I know where I'm going to be, and I know I'm never going to be good at this, but I got to learn so I don't embarrass myself." And then Schaub would go over to him and just say, "Hey, man, this show's a little," well, you know how Schaub does it, "Hey, man." But he would say, this show's a little overbearing, et cetera. So he not only did he play the role of a father figure on Tough Guys, but no one can really say a bad thing about him. And I wish I had those Kimbo drops right now where he does the baby nuts and you fool. But we got to talk about Kimbo's passing, guys.
Yeah, hearing about Kimbo's death was just almost as shocking as hearing about Jordan Parsons' death. Wow. 2016, is, as I said on the Junkie Show, has really been an asshole. I mean, we've lost so many personalities this year. Just like that, they're gone. You know what I mean? Kevin Ferguson was 42 years old, dude. That's not far away from me, how old I am. You know, like, that's pretty serious. And he left six children behind, a wife behind. You know, just sad state of affairs to for him and his family. And I send out my condolences for them.
Yeah, you know, I really did not know Kimbo until he came on to Tough. I was never a YouTube guy to watch videos, and I'm not into watching street fights, to be honest with you, on with kids and backyards. So I wasn't into that, man. So my first intro to Kimbo was on Tough, man. And, you know, he's got that look, that, you know, that gangster look, that tough guy look, that mean guy look. But that was you know, way far from what he really was, you know. Talking, hearing some of his coaches talk about him, hearing some of his teammates talk about him, man, he really was a great guy, a family guy. And fortunately, man, I was at his last fight here in Houston in February, man. And, you know, I didn't get to meet the guy, but I did see him briefly outside the workouts. And, man, he signed all the autographs and took all the pictures, man. So, you know, rest in peace to Kimbo, man. He made a great impact to this sport, whether you agree with that or not. You know, he brought in viewers that weren't watching MMA. You know, he brought in that demographic. So,
Joe,
you know,
told us you were at that Bellator show.
Man, come on, man. I'm all over the place. It was in Houston. If they come to Houston,
man,
I'm going. Come on.
Yeah, Joe, it's kind of crazy that when you bring that up, the Houston show, that both guys, one guy almost died in the ring that night. And, you know, a couple months later, Kimbo has now passed away with heart problems also. Pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, you know, I want to touch on that. You know, I'm not sure if you guys saw Paul Giff with Bloody Elbow. He put out a report last week or 2 weeks ago about Bellator, one of the former employees, putting out that they were forging medicals, you know, and that's very serious, you know, to put in a guy that really shouldn't be fighting. So I really hope that it doesn't come back if they did the same thing with Kimbo. I mean, that would be just a horrific tragedy. I really hope it doesn't come to that, man. But you've got to think about that. You know, they've done it before, and, you know, who's to say they wouldn't do it again? That was a big fight for those guys. They drew a big number on TV. They drew a big number in a Toyota Center in Houston. So, you know, we'll see what comes of that, man.
Hey, it's interesting, Joe, because that story got buried, right? I mean, I do recall that story being out and about Bellator and the medicals, et cetera, but that got buried, right?
Yeah, there wasn't
sure.
much play on it, I don't think.
It's crazy to see stories like that get buried. I mean, not everybody has to you know, click the big clickbait stories. I mean, that's a serious story, man. You know, to me, Bellator can close up shop if that comes to reality, man. If what the gentleman said about Bellator, you know, that's very serious.
And another thing
about some serious money. Go ahead, Proteus.
Yeah, sorry about that, Tony. Another thing that I found very concerning about the Texas Commission that Luke Thomas brought to light on his show on Wednesday is that you could only need to get your medicals 6 months before you fight. You don't have to get any new medicals. If you got medicals 6 months ago, you're good. You don't have to get any more leading up to a fight in Texas. So we can throw some shade on Bellator, but I think what we also have to do is throw a little bit of shade on the Texas Commission, because as we know, they're not exactly the most stand-up commission. Sorry about that, Joe.
Ouch.
Well, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say that. I mean, they're not the well-known, the most recognized top flight commission. I mean, there's issues over there. They've been there for years. Yeah, and you're right. You know, this comes on the commission also. I mean, they're not 6 months. That's ridiculous, man. I mean, so much can happen
Isn't
in
it?
6 months. In sparring and in a fight. I mean, a guy can have three fights and you know, 100 sparring sessions, and you're telling me nothing is going to happen in that 6 months? That's crazy.
The
well,
way
let's
Thomas
talk
put
about
it was,
that. Go ahead. Go ahead, Proya.
The way Luke Thomas put it was, you could have intercourse with 100 people with HIV and not have to get tested again and then go into a fist fight and bleed all over everybody and all over the canvas, that's quite concerning.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to touch that one. Hey, guys, but what we're talking about, what we're talking about all this and the exemptions, Texas, et cetera, let's talk about the Brock extension, the Lesnar exemption, the fact that, and I think Proteus brought it up last show, but I think it was 4 months, right, that they need to be tested. And
correct.
I know that he's being tested now, but it's effectively less than 30 days, I believe. What's your take on that, guys?
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty crazy. I mean, you know, the UFC controls these kinds of exemptions, and that's the thing that's bothering people. You know, Mark Hunt has come out and said, you know, hey, you know, that this is not fair, that's not right. But it's a tricky situation. You know, I don't really care as far as the four-month waiting period. I just want to see him tested, and so far he's been tested already. He got tested this week. So that's all I care for, man. As long as if he went the whole, you know, July 9th and he didn't get tested, I'd have a problem with that. But as long as he's tested, you know, I can see him being tested two or three more times before the fight. That's all I'm worried about.
Wow.
Yeah, guys, I understand what the UFC's side is and what they're going to say in their PR is that they need this loophole in order to bring in short notice fights. And to bring people in on short notice, but that's also just a way for them to put things like this on, like Mark Hunt said, he could have just cycled off, you know, he could have been juicing until this point, cycled off, and now he's being tested because this what EPO only stays in your system for like what 24 hours or something silly like that. So to me, it's an issue. In this case, I don't know, because we know where he's coming from, and he's come from pro wrestling, and we know that there is a lot of steroid use in that entertainment industry. So that's why it concerns me a bit. And yeah, it's great that he's being tested now, and I hope they test him every single week until the fight day.
The interesting part will be, you know, we don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. But this fight needs to go through. And what's going to happen with the weight cut, guys, as well with Brock? Because doesn't Brock have to cut, Joe, I think? Is he a 300-pounder in WWE? Or I know that he has to cut a lot of weight to get to 265, guys. I don't think he's going to get there as well. So it's interesting all the stuff that I think the UFC is going to do for him. What does he weigh, Joe? Do you know what Brock's normal weight is?
No, I don't know. I'm going to guess over 300 pounds. And, you know, look, man, he's made weight before. He's going to make weight again. There's a lot of money on the line for this guy. You know, to me, this guy just came back for a payday, and there's nothing wrong with that, man. There's nothing wrong with that. If he wants to come back and get smashed by Mark Hunt and go back to wrestling, that's on him, man. But the issue I have a little bit, you know, I don't want to get too much into wrestling, is that he's scheduled to go back to WWE like a month later for an event. And if they're counting on Brock Lesnar not getting hurt in this fight, I mean, that's an issue, man. He's going to get hurt in this fight, and he's not going to be medically cleared to go back to wrestling. So the WWE is rolling the dice here, and we'll see what happens if they get snake eyes, man. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point there, Joe. I had thought about this exact same thing. Mark Hunt isn't you know, a light hitter. That dude, if he gets his hands on you, is going to cause some problems for your face and your brain. Now, if Brock is able to get him down and smother him and stay on top of him and win in 30 seconds, we got no problem. But I don't see that happening, to be honest.
We've said this before, guys, where what we know about MMA is that we don't know jack about MMA. But I want to get your opinion on this, guys. We have to go into this just a tad, and we'll touch wrestling on that later because we want to do a spinoff on Amp Radio. You know, probably, you know, Amp Radio Presents, you know, breaking it down or somewhere down the line. But back into Brock, guys. I don't see any chance at all, Joe. Well, you guys have to correct me on this, Joe, but I don't see any chance at all that Brock beats Mark Hunt. I just don't see it. I think he's going to get knocked out probably in the first 2 minutes, maybe three. What do you guys think?
Well, listen, man, he's got that killer takedown, man. Brock, I don't know if you remember, Tony, but he is a big athletic guy. He can take anybody down with that humongous takedown. So I know Mark Hunt's got the good takedown defense, but has he ever seen a takedown from a 300-pound gorilla like Brock is? He moves so quick, so fast. If he gets a takedown and can stay on top of Mark, I mean, he can win. I think the odds are pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and let's remember what Brock Lesnar did to Heath Herring. He broke Heath Herring's face with his fist. So he does have lunch boxes for hands. So if he lands those things, you never know.
But the thing is, guys, he hasn't fought in how many years, Joe? I mean, how many years has it been since the last time Brock fought, Joe?
I think it's five. I think it's 5 years.
And the one thing we know, Proteus, about Brock Lesnar is he doesn't like getting hit, guys. He does not like getting hit. And he turns his back and becomes that cradle. So I just don't see there's a chance that that's going to happen. We have Marco calling in. Let's get into it. Gentlemen, we have a major guest coming on, a junkie favorite, and frankly, one of my favorites, Marco from Waco. Marco, welcome to Amp Radio, another MMA podcast.
Marco from Waco.
Perfect.
Oh, man, that's one of my favorite intros. There's no doubt about it. Hey, Marco, by the way, we're so happy, honestly, and pleased that you're on. You really are a legend in this, and I don't know anything about the Junkie Hall of Fame or any of that, but I can tell you this. If there was a Junkie Hall of Fame, and I don't know if you're already in it or not, but you'd be in it. Joe, what do you got for Marco?
Yeah, Marco, I just want to say what's up, man. Thanks for coming on. And I just want to basically get to know you a little bit here, man. So, this show is a pay homage to MMA Junkie Radio. So tell us how you found MMA Junkie Radio, man.
Okay, first, I'm going to be a little bit on a serious note. My prayers go to all the victims on the Orlando shooting, man. Terrible tragedy on a day like this on national news. You know, we're going to try to make light of, MMA and these killing pussies, you know, and killing geese here. But, you know, it's kind of somber this day, whatever. First of all, guys, I was positive plan. It was kind of a fluke because, I got into MMA back in 2005 with the Ultimate Fighter. Right after I came back from Germany, I stumbled into this one show, The Ultimate Fighter. You know, my first subject was really into MMA. We're introducing a new Army Combatics program, so everybody's doing jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and all this stuff. So I fell in love with the sport, and I stumbled upon The Ultimate Fighter. So, hey, guess what? I started watching mixed martial arts, and then, of course, I got deployed, and we were watching the fights on the Armed Forces Network at the time. Fast forward to all the way to 2012, 2013, and I'm searching MMA podcast because there wasn't nothing good out there at the time, and I come into MMA. John, can I start listening? The guys, and I heard people calling, like, you know, the clear water, this bad boy, you know, my nemesis, and Rick Budo. Ross from Boston, of course, you know, that he used to call much, and Kendra, no, let's not forget Kendra, used to call a lot. Well, one day I decided, I'm going to make a phone call. And I literally, the first time I tried, I chickened out. I couldn't make it. I got nervous. I don't know why. I'm not the kind of guy that
I think we all did.
Yeah. The second time around, I actually, because the ghost actually put me on hold, I just tough it off. And it was terrible. I stumbled all over, stuttered. I couldn't make sense of anything. I thought, man, I would never want to call again. But Gigi told me, call again. That was a good call. You're nervous. And I just stopped calling. And next thing you know, I became addicted. I became a junkie.
Marco, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
Hey, Marco, I got to ask you, because you just got into you just mentioned Junkie, and this is what we are, right, is an homage to the show. So tell me, in terms of how did you find the Junkies, though? Did you find them through the Tag Radio days, or did you find them through Sirius? How did you find the guys?
No. Okay, right in between the Tag Radio days and Sirius was when they were just on Ustream and on podcast.
Yeah.
And I found them through podcast and made the transition to Ustream. I used to watch them on Ustream, like I said, end of 2012, beginning of 2013. And that is how I became a junkie. That is the interface. That is what I call the core junkie days before Sirius and after Tag. I am in between. And I actually met the guys, first of all, in Houston. That's where I met Joe. And Houston, when Cain Velasquez fought Junior Dos Santos for the third time. And, you know, the famous Gilbert Melendez, Diego Sanchez fight. That was my actually first live event. And after that, I kept going to events, and I went to the Junkie Gathering of 2014, and I met all the junkies there. And it was a fantastic time. But every time the UFC comes to Texas, I make it a point to go to the live event.
Yeah, so, Marco, we're getting to know you here a little bit, and you're not all just MMA. You've served your country, and I know you've talked a bit about it on the Junkie show, but can you go into that a little bit for us now, for anybody that may not have heard it on the Junkie?
Okay, you want the long story or the cliff notes?
Long story.
Okay, so here we go, man. I got to go a little bit back in time, man. So, but it's not by the action that, even though I was born in Puerto Rico, my family is from Chile. So when I was a year and a half old, my family went back to Chile, and I was raised there. Oddly enough, while I was in high school, all my peers went to the military schools in Chile, you know, the military academy where they become officers, and I never had nothing to do with the Army. Well, I always wanted to come back to the United States, so I went back to the United States in 1990 for the purpose of going to college. I went to Buffalo State University. I got an associate's degree there. I got an associate's. And then... because my mentor in the United States, a very good friend of the family that was taking care of me, I got influenced into going into the ROTC program in Albany State University. So that was all going great, but me, being a knucklehead, decided that women and party was more important than keeping my GPA and my scholarship. So guess what? I lost that. Yeah, I'm a dumbass. So in 1994... at the end of 1994, beginning of 1995, I decided, okay, I'm going back to Chile. I went back for 6 months. I realized that there was nothing left for me in Chile. Came back to the United States, and as soon as I touched down in New York, called my buddy in Albany, traveled all the way to Albany. The next day, walking to the recruiting station, I said, I'm going active duty. The plan at the time was, okay, I'm going to do 4 years, get the GI Bill, and go back to school and finish. Well, the Army decided to send me to Korea. And I love Korea. Then the Army decided to send me to the 82nd Airborne, and I love the 82nd Airborne. Then the Army decided to send me to Germany, and there you go. Then we got into war, and I went to Iraq a couple of times, but that is another story. So, yeah, it was just happenstance. I fell into the career when I didn't have too much into it when I was a kid. You know, I didn't think I was ever going to be in the military, and next thing you know, I went into it, and I love it. I could not get enough of it. I went all over the world. I've seen a lot. I mean, I've seen the good and the bad of humanity. I've seen the most beautiful places, and I've seen some cheatiest places too, but hey, love it.
Yeah, Marco, I just want to get into you a little bit now. I've hung out with Marco, man, and whether you guys know it or not, he's a little bit of a celebrity, man. I mean, I was at a weigh-in with him in Dallas, and he's talking, and then I see people going up to him. Hey, man, I recognize your voice, man. Are you Marco from Waco? And he's like, oh, yeah, man, I'm going to take a picture, sign your autograph. So I just got to put it out there, man. Marco's got fans, but Marco's got a lot of haters, man. So, Marco, I just want to ask you, like, how do you deal with the people who love you and the people who kind of hate on you a little bit?
Okay, first of all, you know, like I told you, like, the Army, you got to learn to grow thick skin because everybody's busting your balls. But, sometimes, you know, like a lot of people know about my issue with my eyes, man. You know, I'm disabled veteran because I got this disease called retinitis pigmentosa that literally makes me going blind. Eventually, my sight is going to go away. that is what I get sense into, because people that say that I sit around and I do nothing, they don't know the whole story. You know, you met me, Joe. I'm the kind of guy, I not only look the part, but I act the part. I like to be inactive. I'm a very social guy. I like my party. And I like being up there. But because of this, disease, it has limited the amount of stuff that I can do on the outside, because I've been very light sensitive, and I cannot enjoy the way things are the way that I used to, and that is when it gets me, you know? So I hate it when the fucking haters say, hey, why is he putting on these other shows? Why is he doing this? Why is he doing that? You know, that's he got a life. Yes, I do have a life. My life now is dedicated to be a stay-home dad and take care of my kids while my wife goes to work. And don't worry about the money, because my pension is pretty freaking good, so I'm doing fantastic.
Hey, Marco, I got to ask you this, because in terms of knowledge, you're probably one of the most knowledgeable callers, because a lot of people call in, like you said, you know, Clearwater Beach, et cetera. And I call in just to really get one subject in and then get out. But the one thing that I like that you do is you always bring energy. And I've said this many times, Marco, one either has it or they don't. And you have it. You have the it factor. So what else are you interested in besides MMA? Are you interested in other sports as well? I think are you into soccer?
Okay, check it out. Back in high school, I played rugby, because rugby is huge in Chile. In college, because I came from South America, I played a stopper in Buffalo State, and I played midfielder in Albany. Now, I never really too much into soccer, even though I got the half a scholarship just for kicked and giggled, you know, just because I was from Chile. I always, all my life, did some sort of martial arts. I did kickboxing. My brother is a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I am a blue belt. I did taekwondo when I was a kid. And I lifted all my life. I'm pretty well put up. I'm pretty well built. Joe can attest to that, too. And I'm a little hefty now because I gained weight, but back on the day, yeah, I look good. when I was a kid, I was freaking obsessed with dinosaurs. Hey, ask me anything about dinosaurs, I know it.
What's your favorite dinosaur and why?
Hey, go for it.
So you were just saying, Marco, that you've been into mixed martial arts for a long time. So let's go into this. What is your favorite old school promotion? Maybe that doesn't exist anymore, or just something that you watched back in the day. Tell us a little bit about that.
Old school promotion, man. A lot of people say Pride, man, and I will agree with that. But you gotta go and watch the IFL, the International Fight League. They got some good fights in there too, brother. IFL, you know, especially I never understood what they were doing with the team concept. But it was something new. They tried something different, and for a while I thought it was gonna work. But one man longer with us, so there you go. We got Roy Nelson out of it. And Ben Rockwell too. Let's not forget about Ben Rockwell from the IFL too. Yeah, that would be like the two that probably like the most.
Well, Proteus didn't know that Marco is a Zuffa zombie. Proteus didn't know that. Marco is
or Zuffa. That's Marco, right, Marco?
I know too much about Super Zombie anymore, because they fixed to piss me off this week. You know, I overheard you guys talking about the alien situation, and I saw that was complete bullshit, you know. And I've been pretty vocal on all the radios about it. I got Brian Stan hanging up on me because I was asking him about the same thing. But hey, there you go, Brian. You know, he's a shell. I'm glad the way it ended up, though. Area profile is bigger than ever, so I think he's a little bit more chills around him now. I don't see the powers that be can pull that same stone again against him, at least, anymore. I don't know about others, but I hear rumors that all the other media organizations in MMA are going to start probably talking to each other and banding together, maybe make an MMA Writers Association or something like that. That would be great, so they protect each other, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, Marco, I want to ask you this. I ask every guest this, and I think it's kind of fun, but Mary Shag Kill. Do you know how that's played, Marco? The Mary Shag Kill?
Yeah, everybody knows that game.
All right, so I don't know who your favorite fighters are, and we'll probably ask you this, but got to go into this. Mary Shag Kill. So I always like to go into something topical, so we'll go Letourneau, Jessica I, and, well, I don't think anyone's going to choose her, but Betch Kohea.
Kill Korea. Kill Korea. Right off the top. Mary Letourneau and Chad Jessica.
There you go. Whoa, that'll
be good choice. Good choice.
There you go. Man, this Korea getting a lot, dude. Poor girl.
So, Marco, you were just talking with Joe about the UFC. And the stuff going down with Ariel. Quick question for you. Do you think we're seeing the end of the Zuffa reign, or do you think that Zuffa's just going to keep on rolling over until the end of time?
Well, nothing lasts forever, but I'm saying we're not seeing the end. I think we're seeing an expansion. With all the talk about the Chinese buyout, I think it's only going to be a partial buyout. But with that comes a lot of responsibilities because they're going to get new investors in it. And I think that also played a part on the fact that they turn around real quick and reinstate the area. What I truly believe is that we're going to see less and less of Dana, more of Dan Schuller, you know, and the other guys, the PTs, in the future, because it's becoming more corporate. And the least, especially because Lorenzo Fertitta came out really bad out of this situation. I mean, Ariel made it a point to say that Dana told him Lorenzo was the one that went him out. Lorenzo got aspirations of being an NFL owner one day, and the NFL is not the kind of entity that put out with situations like this, you know. If he wants to be an NFL owner, he has to clear his name of situations like this. We're going to see less and less of those guys.
Yeah, Marco, real quick, and I want to go back a little bit. I want to bust your balls a little bit. Now, GG called you out on air that you're calling these shows with the same topics, and you took it like a man, you took it like a champ. But my question is, like, how do you keep your schedule, man? How do you, like, line up who you're going to call, what day? Like, do you have a schedule lined up? How do you do that, man?
Well, because the guy's going to Sirius, and I already got Sirius on my two cars, you know, you get the syllabus free on the internet. Like I said, I'm stay on that, so I got my wrap around my neck all day taking care of the kids and to entertain myself because I don't want to be in front of the TV all freaking day. You know, I'm doing things around the house or taking care of the dog or taking care of the yard. I got my headphones on and listening to the shows. And when a topic comes that I'm really interested in, just go ahead and talk. And sometimes, you know, when a topic comes out that I want to actually elaborate on or get different points of view, I handle the same topic out. I don't care. I mean, if people want to see another opinion, go ahead, you know. I want to ask the same question and see how the guys on the other shows answer to it or react to it.
Hey, Marco, I want to ask you this because this came up, you know, again, we're an homage to MMA Junkie Radio, but this actually happened a little bit and we went into it for probably about a week, and I remember your call on this. But do you recall when Junkie was cut down again from 3 hours to 2 hours and then from 2 hours to 1 hour, and you listen to a lot of the Sirius XM content. What's your take even now on MMA being cut down to effectively 1 hour where they have the mass audience? And honestly, I think they're a better show than most of the shows that are on that. I think they're the best show on Sirius XM. So tell me about that. What do you think who are your favorite shows on Sirius XM? And number one, most important, what do you think of them being cut down to, you know, to an hour?
Yeah, it's still a sore spot for me, man. By far, and I am biased, I always going to be biased, Junkie is the best show by far. Not only because of the content and because of the guys, it's because the access they got to the fighters, man. Put any other MMA show up there on Sirius, like, got the amount of fighters and coaches and celebrities that the guys at Junkie do. There is not. There is absolutely not. And on the daily basis, they can pull a series of different fighters and superstars and champions, and no other show on Sirius XM can do the same. And that's just a reality. I was really pissed off when they cut down an hour because of the Copacabana and Beach show that closed right before them. I make my feelings now. And you know what? It is Series X and Law. She's able to pull the guys back to 2 hours, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon unless they do a renegotiation and stuff. They got the guys from Buster Up and on whatever, you know, a lot of people like their freaking pro wrestling crap. Move these guys to the freaking evening, on Monday as well as on Friday, there is nothing after freaking Luke Thomas. Move them to that spot, and then we'll be happy. Or whatever, not the boxing guys. Or whatever. Don't worry about it. My point being is, like, if I was the SiriusXM freaking president, I would realize that because of the nature of the channel, Karina and Rich got nothing to do with the channel at all. You know, I would completely remove them because, really, like, what the hell that Copa Carino and Bitch had to do with the Sirius Cam Ranch? It's nothing to do with combat sports or entertainment or pro wrestling or boxing or any of that. I would put them on another channel and leave that just for, you know, combat sports and, you know, give MMA Junkie back their hour and create another 2 hour show early in the morning. You know, bring maybe a Chelsea on or somebody, another celebrity, and open that spot for them.
That's a good idea, by the way, too. That's a good idea.
Well, he's kidding.
Yeah, Marco.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Marco, I'm sorry to keep this on the serious note, but I'm interested in getting another Junkie's outlook and view on this situation. Now, you mentioned the media association with Ariel. Do you think that this subject or this happening with Ariel could in any way affect the class action lawsuit that the fighters are putting against Zuffa?
It's two completely different situations, man. Jack in the army. You know, I did work with the Joe Capuchino. You know, I used to work in with the criminal law, so I understand a little bit how the law works. And it's two separate entities, two separate classes. That's why, for example, Dana White has stopped talking because they were using a lot of what Dana said against him.
Yeah.
But because the USC is a private institution, the event is their event, they're actually on the right to remove the credentials of anybody, of any press. Because it's basically a privilege, you know? So if you talk about legally speaking, they did absolutely anything wrong. And that is a reality. Removing the credentials of Ariel from the legal point of view, there is no recourse because it's on their right to remove anybody's credentials because they issue the credentials. Now, on the court of public opinion, that's a different story. But that cannot be used as evidence because they are the complete, absolute right to do it. So, it will not affect it. But in the eye of us, the fans, it doesn't look too good. And now that the mainstream media pick up on it, it doesn't look good that either. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Marco, man, let's talk some fights, man. You know, we got some fights next week in Ottawa, Canada. Am I saying that correctly,
Sotis? Yeah.
You are.
Talk to me.
Okay, all right. We got Rory McDonald against Stephen Thompson, man. How do you think that plays out, man?
I think that Rory McDonald is the better fighter, and I think he's the most well-rounded fighter, and I think he's going to beat Stephen Thompson. And most probably a decision, but the scene about it is that Rory McDonald, even in his loss against Robbie Lawler, showed me the kind of fighter he is. That kid gets so much heart, and the way he outstruck Tariq Safadin, that is an outstanding striker too, also showed me that I don't see Stephen Thompson is going to show anything new to Rory too, because they also sparred together before up there on TriStar. So it's not like he's going to see anything new. I'm leaning again with Rory by decision, unanimous or split doesn't really matter. But Thompson is not a pushover, so, you know, Rory had to make his P's and Q's.
Hey, Marco, when I think this card has been really underrated, in my opinion, because it's, you know, I don't think people give the fight nights as much credit as they should, but you have a lot of good fights, including Cerrone and Cote, and both of those guys, I think, have struggled at times, and I think they've had a resurgence at times. That's a tough fight. And I don't know who's going to take that. What's your take on Cote versus Cerrone?
I will go with Cerrone just because, first of all, he's the most active fighter. And Cote is going to get in up there at an age, you know. Cerrone, he's actually a fan favorite. Everybody loves Cabo Cerrone. Sometimes he doesn't look too good when you give him a long layoff, but this is not a long layoff for him. He fought not too long ago, and that's where he's sharp. I think Cerrone is going to pull it off. Cody is far to take, you know, knockout or anything like that. I'll give Cerrone the edge on the ground. I'll a little bit more even on the feet, but I still give the edge to Cerrone, too. Cerrone, also unanimous decision, and I'll probably fight on the night because Cody come back. I got a question for you guys. How freaking crazy is that Michael Bisping is the middleweight champion of the world, dude? How happy were you for that, dude? How happy were you? How honestly happy were you for that, dude?
It shocked that
was
awesome. Me, man.
Yeah, that was awesome. But the thing about it is, it was overshadowed by the whole Ariel situation, man. So UFC put their foot in their mouth, man, and that's a huge story, man. So it's a shame that they did that, man. So they're paying for it. But that was insane, man.
Oh, okay. I understand that. But, for example, before I even knew about Ariel, because I found out about Ariel after the show, at the moment I saw Michael Bisping knock Blue Rojo out, I jumped out of my seat and I was like screaming like
sure.
A little girl, dude. Like, oh my God! Oh my God! Michael Bisping is the champion! Oh my God!
Yeah.
Sure. That was freaking awesome. Oh, man. I just wanted to know, because, you know, like, nobody can give Michael love, but he's champion of the world, dude. And that post-fight press was epic. That post-fight press conference was epic. I don't know if you guys watch it, too, but it's fantastic. Okay, go ahead. I just wanted
to
know.
That's all right. You can hijack the show a bit, Marco, but that's allowed. So I'm going to jump down this. I'm going to jump down the UFC Ottawa card and get your thoughts on the Letourneau versus Caldwell fight at 125. Tell us about this fight, and what do you think about 125? Is this the division of the future?
I don't know. You see, because right between 115 and 135, they're going to poach a lot of the talent from 135 that doesn't need to get talent poached because it's not as deep as 115. I can't pronounce it. Caldwell? I think that it's going to be Bella Letourneau. I think she's a much, much better striker and a much better fighter, to tell you the truth. Interesting that they're doing her at 125. Hopefully they do the division, but at this point I don't think they need it because, like Misha Leha always said, she should probably be fighting at 125, you know, she pushed it to 135 because that's where the talent is. Let's see how it goes. I don't think they're going to do it immediately, but they're dipping their toe into it, so go ahead, man. Dipping your toe into it. But if they're doing 125, why don't they do 145 for Cyborg? Because they got a bona fide superstar on Cyborg there. All you have to do is just, you know, get every single 145 in the planet for Cyborg to just beat up. You know what I'm saying?
Marcos, I just want to tell you, man, you know, your wife, you know, she's really cool. So I just wanted you to tell her hi for us, man. And how old are your kids?
My kid in Germany with my ex-wife is 13. my oldest one with Adeline is 6, and my younger baby girl is 6 months old.
Okay, all right, that's cool, man. So
I spread them all out.
Yeah, I know they're a handful. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, Marco, before I close the door show, I want to ask you about one thing that you mentioned, Cyborg. And Cyborg has always been an interesting dichotomy because she has been getting paid by Zuffa, and you mentioned her as a legit superstar. I just don't see that they have the talent to continue to bring up people to the 145 unless they want to completely go into Invicta and raid everything that they have there. But I just don't see anyone wanting a fighter. Do you, because you brought her up, Marco, do you see anyone wanting a fighter?
I would say that, what was the name that beat her up in Freaking Lion fights? Joanna Barnes, I want a fighter. Joanna Barnes want a fighter because she beat Cyborg. So that, I would say she would want a fighter. And that's a rumor that she should be asking for. But, who knows, man? I mean, Marlos Kunan just got embarrassed in Bellator, so yeah, that fight is not going to happen. And that's the problem with the 145 division. There is no talent out there for Cyborg, but she made 139 pounds on his UFC fight. I think that with a good dietitian and you know a little bit of effort, she will make 135. But that is her decision to make. I don't think there is more Invicta fights for her, not after Brazil. not after that, besides the pay that she got, she just played really well. And the UFC is not going to be putting her on Invicta anymore to showcase her on Brazilian cards and stuff like that. So Cyborg start losing weight, man. I'm not the biggest fan of her, you know. My feelings were not about her, but I understand reality. The reality is that she is a superstar, and the reality is that the money fights for her at 135, and if she really wants to make that big money, lose the weight, Cyborg, lose the weight.
Hey, Marco, I want to say one thing that I think that we've learned. First and foremost, thank you for giving us the time to be on the show, because we are honestly fans of yours, but to see the different side of you, Marco, to see the intelligence and to see, man, you still bring it all the time with energy. I think you bring a lot more to the table than when we get to see it on MMA Junkie Radio. And I think you're, man, it's great to see the intelligence and your energy. So, Marco, thank you for being on the show. We hope to have you on again. And in my eyes, you're a Junkie Hall of Famer, Marco.
I am a two-time champion.
Yeah, boy.
Anytime, guys.
All right,
anytime.
Take care, Marco.
Thanks, Marco. Thank you,
Marco. Bye, Marco.
How about that, guys? Man, you know, Marco, to see the intelligence, guys, and to see the different side of Marco, I think it's great, because he's a really good family man. He's a learned individual. He served our country. Well, not Proteus, because he's Canadian. He served our country, and, man, it's great to have him on. It really is. Did you guys, I know that we have about 9 minutes before Javier Mendez gives us a call, or we call him. Did you guys want to go into, what direction did you guys want to go into? Did you want to go into the UFC card, or do you want to go into other stuff?
Joe?
Yeah, you know, I want to get into this weigh-in policy, man. It went into effect last week at 199, and I think overall it was pretty well received. The fighters got to weigh in a little earlier, got to hydrate some more, and the weigh-in was kind of just for show. And the thing it's kind of funny, but the thing that bothered me was that the media has been pushing for this for a long time, and during the weigh-in they're making fun of it, like, oh, what are they doing? They're just posing for pictures. Well, yeah, they're posing for pictures that you can use for your website. So, yeah, overall, man, it was a great thing. Hopefully other commissions and UFC takes this forward, and we can have guys stripping for pictures next time.
That's a funny thing. You said it, Joe, and you're right, because it was kind of awkward, right? I think Joe Rogan is trying to make it seem extremely official by saying the official weigh-in is. But I don't think the fighters really knew what to do, because they're still stripping down, taking off their socks, most of them, when they don't need to. It's a little interesting. I do think, however, guys, they're looking healthier. Their cheeks aren't completely sucked in. They don't look like that poor Conor McGregor shot that they keep showing, where he looks like a junkie and not a good junkie, not the MMA junkie, the bad kind. But it's kind of weird, guys. I do definitely like the new weigh-in policy, but I think they need to just continue to do it like it's a real weigh-in. But don't take off the socks. Don't take off the shoes. Don't make it any longer than they need to make it. Brody?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think that it's a great step in the right direction. I enjoyed not seeing skeletons and on the scales. And I want to, when we have Javier on, I want to ask him, because he was there live, what his thoughts are about it. But in my mind, there are some concerns. First of all, there was no one allowed, no media was allowed in the room when the fighters were weighing in. That's a bit of a concern, because, you know, the UFC could just say anything. You know, for Brock Lesnar, he doesn't make weight, or he's overweight, or whatever. They could just say whatever. He made it. No worries. Back to you guys' point about the weigh-in itself, the weigh-in show. I didn't have any problem with it. I didn't have any problem with them stripping down and showing us their immaculately sculpted bodies. It's just the way it has always worked. And moving forward, I'm cool with it. And I hope all the commissions across the board adopt this, because it saves the fighters that 4 to 6 hours of extra dehydration and just suffering. And look at $199, guys. This is the first time we've had this policy, and look at all the awesome fights we got.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, you know, we know that you don't have any problem looking at these masculine guys on the scale with no shirt on. We know that, Proteus. But
hey, shirt off nation, baby. No shirt nation.
Well, yeah, man, you said it all, man. You said it all, man. There's nothing really much I can add. I mean, just hopefully, you know, they go forward. It's so hard for all these commissions to agree on one thing, man. You know, we saw this last week. Probably be another 2 years before every commission does this, and that's the thing that bothers me about MMA, the rules and the regulations and all of them on one page, man. It's going to take forever, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one thing that we need to bring up, guys, and we have about 5 minutes before Javier Mendez, a.k.a. Javier Mendez, shows up. The Chad Mendez possible violation, suspension, I don't really know what's going on with that. You know, Proteus, what's your take on that? Because I don't know. Where are we on that, guys?
Well, as far as I know, there's not a lot of news right now, like what happens with these potential USADA violations. So I guess he was randomly tested and something was flagged in either in his urine or his blood or whatever they test they did. And I don't know what to say about these things, these potential USADA violations. So, like, why even tell us about it now? If he did actually do something and you find out, you do the investigation, you find out, tell us then. Or don't tell us, you know, or tell us he was flagged and he's fine afterwards after we did the B sample or whatever. So, yeah, it's kind of a crazy situation and something I never thought we'd see Chad Mendez involved in.
Well, I don't know if you're joking or not, Proteus, but Mendez is really jacked, man. But
sure he is.
You know, I don't. It's crazy, you know, the way that they do it up. And you know, we had the Romero thing. Romero and Tim Means, you know, they got flagged for substances, and they got those checked, and they received a reduced sentence. They only got 6 months because their supplements were tainted. But the thing that bothered me about this story, I'm not sure. I think I brought it up to you earlier, is that Bleacher Report put up a story that Mendez got flagged for a violation, and it was Frankie Edgar's picture, man. That really bothers me, man. Like, how are you going to put Frankie Edgar to Mendez popping for steroids, man? That really – I had a tweet that luckily his manager, Aliyah Delaziz, saw that, and they changed it probably within 4 or 5 hours, man. So that really bothered me, man.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we need to look at, though, to being fair, and again – this may be my Bay Area homer, so check me on it, guys, if you need to. But in all honesty, Chad Mendez is maybe 5'6", maybe. I'm a six-footer, guys. I've never been buff. I actually also train in kickboxing, as you guys know. But someone that's 5'6", guys, like Marco was saying, it's easy for them build up bulk, right? Someone
yeah.
that's a six-footer or taller, guys, it's a lot more challenging. So I don't know. I don't think that Chad has ever – I mean, he is obviously buff, but I don't think he's ever been, like, WWE buff. And so I don't know. I would think at his age, 31, probably still, you know, easy to build up, you know, the muscle. And he's he's listed as 5'6", guys. I'd be surprised if he's 5'6", but he's listed as 5'6". So, you know.
Yeah. Quickly, before we move on, if I may, Tony. And not only is he that small and stocky, but he's been a wrestler his whole life. He's been training and lifting weights. And look at what's happened. Joe, you brought up the other cases, tainted supplements. But look at what happened with Frank Mir. Anything is – with this new USADA testing – there's a lot of stuff that we're going to have to get worked out before the fighters are not going to be flagged for certain things that may not be within their control.
Yeah, let's. I think we're trying to call Javi right now, Javier Mendez. So,
You
know,
it's
pretty crazy, man. You know, this whole, you know, there's a Houston Texan. I don't know if you heard, but a Houston Texan. The name of Dwayne Brown, he got caught with some tainted supplements, and it was in his meat that he ate in Mexico. So, you know, hopefully that works for Frank, man.
Yeah, and not only that, Joe, but there's a bunch of baseball players that have been flagged recently as well for the same sort of thing. Well, Tony's getting Javi on. Do you want to talk about the UFC card a bit?
Which one?
The UFC card. Do you want to talk about the card coming up this weekend? I mean, we talked about it with Marco, but maybe we can give some of our picks.
Yeah, you know, I really let's see here. I guess I'm going to go with Stephen Thompson, man. He's got the momentum, and Rory's been out for a while. He's on a long layoff since 189 from fighting, you know, Robbie Lawler for the belt. He hasn't fought since. I didn't really realize it was that long that he fought. So, and, you know, Thompson has momentum. He's got the skill set. I think he's realized his potential since when he first started. And I think with the win, I think he could probably be next to challenge Robbie.
Gentlemen,
yeah,
we're blessed to have the actually one of the greatest in MMA and one of the best kickboxers that we've seen in the States, Javier Mendez, of course, co-owner and creator, founder, forgive me, of American Kickboxing Academy. Gentlemen, Javier Mendez.
Hey, how you
morning,
guys
doing? Hey, Javier, one thing. I'm big, you know, I'm a Bay Area guy, and I'm a big Bay Area homer. Your gym happens to be my favorite gym in existence, period. But the one thing that I think people forget, because you've trained so many fighters, Javier, they forget that you were a world kickboxing champion. You've been in the industry for a while, and you were a champ. Can you talk to you a little bit about us, about how you got into kickboxing and about you being basically a champ?
Well, I got involved in the kickboxing more like a fluke. It wasn't something that I actually wanted to do. I got involved in the martial arts because of not knowing if I could defend myself, because I almost got into a fight at a nightclub with a drug guy. And, you know, and at that point, I didn't realize, you know, whether I could fight or not. So I went to the first martial arts place that would take me. It happened to be Jeffrey Scott's Tong Sero studio on Marina Avenue in San Jose. So I started training there. After a few years training there, I got disenchanted with the style itself. I needed more, something that was more real. So I went and got involved with this gentleman by the name of Ed Perkins, who was involved in the PKA. He was a professional fighter, and, you know, there was on the ESPN show, they used to show the PKA, so he was one of those fighters. So I got involved with him. After about a year or so, I left that place and got involved with Scott Coker, who was my teacher. And Scott Coker used to throw these events, with Brad Hefton, Troy Dorsey, all the greats, Don Wilson. He used to throw all these guys, the kickboxing events. So I used to help him out with picking up fighters and taking them to the venue, run the back room for him and things of that nature. It wasn't until one day a friend of mine was talking to me about how I'm this big talker. I always would have, could have, should have, you know, and I never really accomplished anything in my life. So it's because of that individual named Juan Alexander, who actually passed away last year.
I'm sorry.
He's the one that got me to do it, because, you know, he pissed me off, you know, and goes, I'll show you, you know, I'm going to do something. So it just so happened that the next week I was having a breakfast. It was at night with at Denny's with Scott Coker. And he was talking about having somebody there with Bill Wallace to do a demonstration thing with him, because the last person that did it got knocked out. And, I was joking, and I said, I'll do it. And he goes, okay, you're on. And he took me serious. But I was joking, and I was like, I was going to tell him, hey, I was just joking. I wasn't serious. But I remembered my friend, you know, shut the F up. You know, you haven't done anything to so don't talk to me. I don't want to hear it until you've accomplished something. So I remember his words, so I decided to go through with it. So, I went to an exhibition with Bill Wallace, and Bill made it look good, you know, and everybody thought I had 10-plus pro fights already without even having one. And, that's how it started. And from there, I started fighting for Scott Coker. I won a world title in 1992 in ISK, full contact kickboxing. Then in 1995, I won another division, a light heavyweight division. First one was light cruiserweight, the last one was a light heavyweight. Pretty much it.
Yeah. That's a pretty cool story. Now, Javier Thunder Mendez, it's an honor to talk to you, man. And like you said, you know, you didn't think that you would be a fighter, but you know, did you think you would be a coach? I mean, how did you transition from being a fighter to being a coach?
Well, I didn't even think I was going to be a coach. I thought I was going to go back to doing real estate. I was a real estate agent when I got involved in fighting, and I just thought I'd put that on the side I was doing private lessons with friends. With some in particular, Larry Tornacasa was one of my first students, and other people like Jim Armetta, who is where I started teaching at his glass shop. It was Capital Glass on right there by Capitol Avenue, and I used to teach at his place, and he let me use it. So that's where it actually started, and it kept growing. And then from me being a fighter and to teaching, people found out about it. They came up, you know, and started coming to me. And then I got my first fighter that came through me that actually wanted to do MMA was Brian Johnston. And it was through Brian Johnston that I got involved in the UFC because I put him in there. I called Art Davey, who was the matchmaker back then. And I told him that I had a heavyweight back then. And it wasn't about great talent so much as you know, good luck, because, you know, they were all heavyweights and they're all monsters, you know, and Brian Johnson fit that description. So I called up and I said I got a heavyweight that would be good, and so we got involved. And so it was through Brian Johnson that I got involved in the UFC. As a result of him, I met Frank Shamrock. And through Frank Shamrock, I was able to get the first, UFC middleweight champion, which is in Frank. And as a result of training Frank Shamrock, I got B.J. Penn, because B.J. Penn was training with Ralph Gracie up in Mountain View, and he had said that when he was done with, if he can win the Worlds in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that, and he would be the first American to do it, that he would want to do MMA, and he'd want me to do it. So once he did win the Worlds, then he came to me. And then from there, it just started evolving more and more fighters came, Kung Lee, so many other fighters just kept coming through the doors.
Hey, Javier, I wanted to ask you this. First and foremost, we want to send our prayers and sincere condolences to Luke Rockhold and his family. We heard during the, in the last few days that Luke's father passed. So we definitely, as a Luke fan, I definitely want to send our sincere condolences. How's Luke doing right now? Is he, because that's a lot to take, obviously, him and in my eyes, probably the best, if not the second best, pound for pound MMA fighter in the world. Losing his belt and now losing his father. How's Luke holding up?
He's doing okay. He's hanging in there, but it's tough. I mean, it's just one of those bitter pills to swallow when you go into a fight and all expectations are on you. There were a lot of expectations put on him, and he put a lot of expectations on himself. He made a mistake. He overextended on a jab, and Bisping capitalized on it. And you can see right from the get-go that Luke was trying too hard. He was trying to make a point. And I think he learned a valuable lesson that he'll never do again, and that is that no matter who you're fighting, when you're in that octagon, You have to take your time. You can't rush anything, because those guys, all of them, are dangerous. There isn't one individual that you'll be fighting in a championship fight that's not dangerous. And I think he learned that lesson. And obviously, the biggest tragic lesson, the biggest tragic that happened to him was his dad passing. I don't see how losing the title could even remotely come close to losing your dad. So, I'm sure he's not in a good place right now. But, he's got a lot of people that are supporting him, and he'll come out of it, and he'll come back stronger. But it's just going to take some time.
Good morning, Coach. Proteus here with you. I wanted to switch gears a bit and bring you back to last weekend. We saw for the first time some of the weigh-in policies change. And since you were there firsthand, I wanted to ask you what you thought about the new procedure, and do you think that it benefits the fighters more than the way it was working previously?
I can tell you firsthand, since you're right, I was there. The weigh-ins in the morning went really quick, really, really easy. Luke was happy as hell. Fighters were happy as hell because they were able to eat earlier, you know. So, yes, it was a big major plus. Definitely big plus. Big plus. The only drawback for them would be that they'd have to come back for the fans weigh in type thing. But from the fighters' perspective, I don't think there's one fighter that would that was not happy. They all seem very happy.
No, Javier, you guys have branched out a little bit. You know, you guys got AKA Thailand with Mike Swick out there. You know, how did that come about with Swick going over there and keeping the name attached to it?
Well, you know, Mike Swick started out trying to do something in Thailand. He was first involved with Roger Huerta, and and I told him back then, you want to use AKA, you know, for the name. And he goes, no, that's okay. So he didn't want to use it at the beginning, but then something happened between him and Roger. I have no idea. I don't really care. Only that, you know, something happened between them, and then so he was on his own. And, you know, and then I asked him again. I go, hey, you know, if you want to use the name, I think it's a good name for you to use over there. And he goes, okay, I'll use it. So I said, you know, you don't want to just call AKA, and I think it would be awesome, you know, put the Thailand behind it. It was his idea, my idea together to put AKA Thailand. And so he said he did it, and it worked out really, really good for him. You know, Mike Swick's one of my original fighters, and he's incredible. He knows how to run our system, and he's going to do an incredible job over there. And you know, for people that want to have the luxury of training with Thai trainers on a one-on-one, have a cheap vacation that's fun, AKA Thailand is the way to go. You know, and that's why he's getting very popular over there for him. A lot of people are coming in the, you know, not just in high season, but off season too, which I knew would happen because he has a name and he's producing quite a lot of fighters over there. He's got quite a bit going on, and it's probably the nicest gym in the world.
Javier, I got to ask you this. You probably have, in my eyes, the best MMA gym in the world. You know, you've been around for, gosh, going on 30 years, and you have some of the best fighters under your stable, Daniel Cormier, Liam McGarry, Luke Rockhold, which is my fave, Josh Thompson, the Punk. I mean, you name it, you got him. Kane, let's not forget Kane and Khabib. I mean, you guys have everyone. What's your take, Javier, on the recent trend that's been fighters, you know, jumping from gym to gym? Are you okay with that? Have you experienced any of that yourself?
I encourage it. I encourage them to go test to other camps and train with other people. I'm good with it. So I'm, if there's any blame per se, or if there's any encouragement, then I'd be the one that would encourage it. I encourage my guys to go train with different trainers. Not one trainer knows it all. And if you can learn from other people, learn, you know, they're family to me. So even if they do switch and they go somewhere else, I'm good. King Mo did it, and King Mo and I are still great friends. Nothing's changed between King Mo and I. He's a great guy, and he went to American Top Team, and I'm good with it. I have no problem at all. You know, choose where you're happy. You know, the way I look at it is, if you can't have a happy fighter, I don't care what you have. You don't have a great fighter, because he's not going to perform at his best because he's not happy training with you. So to me, I have no problem with them going somewhere else. If they can find something else that they'd like better, or they just like to go train with other people to learn cool stuff, great. I'm not against it at all.
Well, Coach, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't ask about this big card coming up, UFC 200. How are Cormier and Kane looking coming up to this big event?
They're doing good, you know. Kane's approaching this a lot different, you know, slowly, learning to take days off, you know, like I've always asked him to do, and he's doing it now because, you know, Kane brings his body to the point of almost break, you know, so he's learning to take days off. And Daniel is looking incredible. You know, he was looking incredible before the freak accident happened, and he's looking great, you know. He's you know, so I'm expecting a great fight, and I kind of feel that we have that, you know, that we're going to take that, we're going to keep that title, you know, and which will be great because, you know, Daniel will have that opportunity for redemption, you know. And I know, you know, a lot of people are thinking, oh, Daniel's going to get smashed. But, you know, watch the first fight. Just watch the first two rounds and tell me if he got smashed. He didn't get smashed. What happened is in the fourth round, he took off because he thought he was winning the fight. And in the fifth round was you know, trying to wrestle too much. But other than that, you know, the fourth and the fifth were obviously, the fourth was obviously his. It was so one-sided. But the fifth was competitive, but Daniel just fought wrong. But the first three rounds were so close, it could have gone either way, you know. And so if you watch the fight, and we as his coaches, myself, Crazy Bob Cook, Rosendo Sanchez and Leandro Vieira, we know what we have, and he's improved in so many areas that I'm expecting a great fight between these guys, though. The only thing is that they're still going to hate each other, and regardless of what the outcome of this fight is, I don't think these guys are going to have that, you know, hey, we're cool now. I don't think so. I think they're still going to be about each other. That's the thing that's interesting about this fight. It's real hate, you know. It's real hate. It's not made up. They got a long, long, long line of, it's like the Hatfields and McCoys, you know. They're not going to like each other.
Yeah, Javier, I got one last question for you. I want to go back a little bit. You know, you guys had a show called Fight Factory. Now, it was in the gym. It followed the guys. It followed the gym stories. Man, I really liked that show. You know, what happened to that? I guess that's not coming back. But how did that come about, and why is it not showing? I mean, I love that show.
I have no idea why it's not showing. You know, I think the new owners or something took over and became more of a woman's show. I think Jennifer Lopez became part owner of it, and I think they changed it more. So the concept, I guess, changed of what they wanted. And you know, to be honest with you, it was the wrong channel in the first place. I thought it was a hell of a show, and it was done well. And I have never heard any negative comments about the show. So it's just the wrong network. Not enough people saw it. So, I just think that was the case with the wrong network. And there was changes in that network. And they were looking to do a second season, but they decided on not. And I don't know why. I wasn't involved in any of the negotiations. So, no, I can't really say why it didn't go through, just that, you know, it didn't. And I'm not unhappy about it. It's cool because, you know, it's the reality show is they show what they show, but, you know, it's they lead you into a story, and they don't tell you what to say, but they do lead you into a story, and you follow the script more or less. And it's kind of like, to me, it's not reality because you're being put into a situation where you know, you create something that's not real that you don't do.
Hey, Javier, first and foremost, I want to thank you for your time. You know, having you on is a true inspiration because, again, I don't think you'll find a bigger fan than I am of your gym. Do you guys still accept, you know, people? Is your gym open to the public in terms of membership, et cetera?
Oh, yeah, that's always been open. That's the number one thing is the students. That's the students that keep the gym afloat.
Great.
You know,
well,
so, yeah, that's always the number one.
Hey, listen, Javier, I want to thank you for your time. Joanna is fantastic. You know, thanks a lot for your time. We are huge fans of your gym and your fighters, and for me, probably you're the best coach that's out there. So thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it, Javier.
All right, you guys. Thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you guys soon, huh?
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
How about that, guys? Gosh, Javier Mendez. Woo. Man, it doesn't get better than that, guys. It does not get better than that. I wanted to bring up something that Joe brought up. You know, we had a cut man that passed away, an incredible cut man. Is it our Rutu? Is that right? Is that the Mata? Is a cut man, Joe, that passed away?
Yeah, I was told it was Alfredo Mata. And he went by the name Huitzi, which I really can't pronounce that, man. So I wanted to ask Javi about that.
Yeah,
I wanted to ask Javi about that. We ran out of time.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to have any sort of anyone passing away, but it's been fantastic, guys. Before we wrap up the show, is there any subject that we didn't get into? I mean, we got the great. Honestly, it was an honor having, you know, Marco from Waco. His intelligence is something that I, you know, he's incredible, guys. He really is. So it was great having him on. Obviously, Javier Thunder Mendez, man, in my eyes, guys, probably the best roster. Some people may say ATT. Some people may even say Jackson Wink. I think that's probably the best roster of big men, period. Let's get into one thing that we didn't talk about, guys, that I think is really important to Joe and to Proteus, and that's the UFC Hall of Fame, guys. Before we close, I want to get into that because we saw again, and I thought this was going to come into fruition when we saw Big John McCarthy really espouse on behalf of Art Davey, the creator of the UFC, and fell on deaf ears again, guys. No Art Davey and the UFC Hall of Fame. Joe, let's get into it. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty unfortunate, man. You know, Bob Myrowitz, you know, he was a very important part of the UFC since the beginning. You know, to be honest, he wasn't even at the event that UFC won. He wasn't even there. He basically did the TV part. He got it on pay-per-view. So, I mean, Art Davey, man, you know, he started it all. You know, how can you put Bob Myrowitz in before Art Davey, the guy who wrote the notes on the paper and put it all the, you know, the money together at the beginning to get this show on the road? You know, he's the one that put the spectacle together. So I really don't understand how you can put the guy who put it on TV before the guy who put it all together. I just don't understand.
Yeah, I think we covered this on Junkie when Art was on the show. And, you know, when I called in, I made sure that I told him how important he was and is to this sport that we all love. And, yeah, let's just hope it gets done one day, guys. Let's just hope it gets done.
Yeah, all right, guys. Well, listen, we've gone long again. Our one-hour show is always an hour plus, but it's always a great thing to have the guests that we have, guys. Let's start closing up shop. I think, again, let's thank Marco from Waco for doing what he did and coming in and being on our show. Let's thank, of course, the great Javier Mendez, guys, which without him, with him, it's incredible to have a show that has the best coach in it. From the man up north, the man in the red corner, the Maple Leaf himself, the man who never has to say sorry, follow him at T-R-O-D-O-S, Proteus. And the man down south, the man who never has to leave any exes because they're all in Texas, Joe Daddy 85. Follow him at Joe Daddy 85. Joe from H-Town, and me, the DJ with the PJs, guys, at the time we start the show. I like that.